This is episode 433, dated Thursday, October 9th, 2025.
You are listening to the In Perspective weekly podcast with Bob Branco and Peter O'Toole.
Hi, everyone. Welcome once again to In Perspective. My name is Bob Branco. Great to be with all of you today. This is episode 433, dated Thursday, October 9th, 2025. And before we continue, let me introduce our good friend and colleague and co-host, Peter O'Toole. Peter, how you doing today?
You're doing fine. On Monday, the temperature got to 80 degrees here, which is unheard of, especially in early October. So it really was kind of warm for Coos Bay, and today it's sort of gotten back to sort of normal, and it's still a beautiful day. The rains are coming, maybe this weekend, but right now we're doing well.
Well, we are having a frost advisory here this evening here in southern New England. Temperatures might go down to freezing. We are on the precipice of a little cold snap here. Before we continue, let me thank those people who make it possible for In Perspective to be made available. We start out with Raymond Gay, our producer. I also want to thank Peter from the Friendship Chat Line. He posts our shows up there. Thank you, Peter, for what you do. Also, our media sources, thank you very much for making our show available over the air. We appreciate that. And also Jacqueline Sylvia from JS Web Solutions, who archives our programs on my website. To find them, go to www.brancoevents.com. Arrow down until you get to In Perspective Podcast. Click on them, and you will see most of our archived programs from latest to earliest.
Merci, Jackie.
I want to thank Cindy for being our facilitator for today's program, and also Brad for being our streamer. And because we're being streamed, let me give out my email address for those people who would like to write us letters, sending us their thoughts about our programs. We like to hear from our fans. It's bobbranco93@gmail.com. That's bobbranco93@gmail.com.
Bob, before you go any further, I feel compelled to say that whoever that Peter is who helps you with the phone chat, it is not me. So whoever that Peter is, I thank him for the work he does. It is not me.
Right. This is Peter from Canada.
Ah, okay. Well, as they might say, I am not from Canada.
Yeah. Anyway, back for a second appearance. As a matter of fact, he was on this program just over a year ago, and I'm referring to Rabbi Lenny Sarko. Shalom, Rabbi. How are you?
Good. Shalom. Shalom. Thank you for, I guess I didn't chase you away the first time around.
Well, no, we wanted to have you back right from the get-go. So you wanted to talk about some Jewish, I know we touched on the Torah last time that you were on the show. I don't know if you wanted to elaborate on that further or get into other things, but we'll follow your lead. Where would you like to start?
Well, the focus today is going to really be on refreshable Braille. So I am going to do a little bit on the religious side, but there's also going to be a non-religious component to this. The idea is really to get people a little bit thinking a little bit more about refreshable Braille and what it can do and how it can do it. And that is really going to be my focus today, along with the work I've done over the past year in providing different refreshable Braille texts for people.
For those people who don't know, what is refreshable Braille?
Well, I'm going to get into that in a few minutes, so let's kind of dive in. I thought it would be important to provide a little bit of a foundation before we get into the refreshable Braille itself.
Okay, go ahead.
So again, I obviously as a rabbi, I come from a religious background. So we kind of have to ask the question, when a blind or visually impaired person goes into a synagogue or a church, what's the expectation? So I've actually had the opportunity to attend different church services, and a lot of the action, depending on the denomination, might take place through the service leader, but not always. In Judaism, this is certainly not the case, as the congregation tends to be highly participatory, especially in use through different kinds of prayer books. So that kind of gets us back to an interesting fact, because prior to the advent of Braille, which really occurs in the mid-1980s, what did a blind or visually impaired person do in relation to prayer books? Because at least from a Jewish perspective, it goes back thousands of years, right? Braille doesn't really begin until French Braille in, what, 1820s? English Braille, the 1930s? Hebrew Braille comes about in the 1940s. Written texts, religious texts, five books of Moses. In Hebrew, we call that Chumash. Its actual compilation goes all the way back to roughly 537 BCE with Ezra. That's over 2,500 years ago. From that point forward, we had different community services, for example, that read these texts. Again, which happened with the Torah scroll, and the reason I came for the Torah scroll is why a community service, those scrolls, you know, until we get to Mr. Gutenberg in the modern era, those scrolls were extremely expensive. So when a community brought in a scroll, how does people get the information? Well, we would come together as a community once, twice, three times a week, and they'd read from it. Again, one of the really interesting perspectives from a Jewish standpoint is who has the opportunity to do this reading on behalf of the community? And the answer to that is anybody. Judaism does not have an aristocracy. There is no pecking order. Everyone and anyone can have the opportunity to lead a service, can read from the Torah, can do a funeral, can actually conduct a wedding, although, you know, your states say otherwise, religiously they can. But there is one exception. The exception is that it had to be read. It couldn't be memorized. In Judaism, we always ask why. And the easiest way I've been able to explain this is most of you probably have played the party game telephone at some point.
Yeah.
Yes?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. So what happens in the memorized story as it goes on, it changes over time, right? Well, we don't want to do that with the Torah scroll, so it had to be read. And it was considered what's called an aliyah, high honor, to do that reading on behalf of the community. And again, anyone has that opportunity. In today's world, most synagogues, when they do a bar bat mitzvah, that's what that person does. They read from the Torah scroll. But there was a problem in that the blind or visually impaired never received that honor. We have to kind of, again, jump forward a little bit and talk about Braille and religious texts. Again, Braille doesn't come to fruition to any extent until the 1900s, give or take. The problem, again, resolves is when you get a single prayer book, even if it's a Christian prayer book or a Jewish prayer book, a single book, and emboss it in Braille, you end up with multiple three-ring binders. If you look at the five books of Moses and put that into embossed Braille, you end up with it's like 20 or 22 three-ring binders. Remember I said we do this reading weekly at the synagogue. Were you going to bring this 16 or 18 or 20 binders to the synagogue to try to follow along? It never happened. So they couldn't follow along in the prayer book and they couldn't do the honor of the reading. What we found is that in most cases, the blind and visually impaired did not feel like they were part of the community, and they simply didn't join synagogues. That bothered the heck out of me. I need to, again, preface a little bit my own situation. I have been sighted for most of my life, but about 8 years ago or so, I became visually impaired. I lost all my vision in one eye, 20% in the other. So I kind of have a foot in both worlds. And I was always told that I could theoretically lose all my vision at some point. And that's when I kind of got into Braille and learned about Hebrew Braille and learned Hebrew Braille, which no course existed at the time. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. But again, from my personal standpoint, I felt the need to make sure that a blind or visually impaired person, when they came to the synagogue, they had the opportunity to feel like they were fully part of the community, that they did not have any restrictions on doing anything and everything that anybody else could do at the synagogue. So a year ago or so, we talked about the Hebrew Braille Torah scroll. So this is Hebrew Braille put on parchment in the same manner and restrictions as a regular written scroll, and it then allowed a blind person to have that high honor. I then turned my focus to the prayer books and said, what are we going to do about this? And I began to discover refreshable Braille. So again, let's talk a little bit about some real basic history of refreshable Braille. Again, with the boom of technology and computers, really refreshable Braille goes all the way back to the 1950s. Began as an experiment to bring up Braille electronically. Those initial devices were rather big and bulky and expensive, as all initial computer technologies are. But with chip advancements and developments over time, they ended up producing a device that was both small, portable, and fairly cheap. So in today's world, a refreshable Braille device is about 3 inches wide, 6 inches long, about 1 to 2 inches thick. It weighs less than a pound. Now, these devices were initially designed to read one line of text at a time. So it really focused on things like short stories and novels, where you could bring up a line, you hit a button, and it would go to the next line. So the pins that would come up as your Braille cells would go down and then refresh up into the new line. Depending on the device, you could either have a 20-cell Braille or a 40-cell Braille, and you basically just hit a button and down it goes. Now, the beauty of these is that, just like computers, you could put an entire book on a flash drive or right into the machine itself. So I could put an entire 5 books of Moses on a flash drive, one flash drive, and you could have it all there for you.
Only beats 15 to 20 volumes carried around.
Oh man, I'm telling you. So again, a little bit of history, right? In 2011, the International Blindness Agencies banded together and they formed something called the Transforming Braille Group, and they pooled their resources and created a new display that they actually sold for less than $500, which made it pretty affordable for most people. This was done by the group is called Orbit Research. It's headquartered in Delaware. The device was called an Orbit 20. It was a total new design. It was called a micro machine. Again, what it does is it raises and lowers these Braille pins. Then what happened is the government stepped in and they said, well, we want to do something for this particular demographic. And so they developed these, by the way, these initial refreshable Braille devices and the commercial ones you can buy, you can not only read, you can actually write. So you could put a little flash drive in it or store it right within the machine and write a little letter to yourself. It could be used instead of like a slate and stylus. Yes. When the government stepped in, they said, well, we're going to create a device that's read only, but they're going to work it through the National Library System and offer these for free.
Oh, wow.
And they do that today. You can go to your local library, and as long as you're blind or visually impaired, you can apply and they'll give you, literally give you for free, a refreshable Braille device. So it works a lot like you can actually integrate it into the Bard system for those of you who use Bard and download books and read books through Braille if you, instead of audio, if you so choose. But again, when I saw this, I said, what a great thing. But we have a little bit of a problem. What's the problem? A novel, when you read it, is line by line. When you go and use prayer books, at least in the Jewish faith, you'll be there sitting there and they'll be on page 35 and the prayer leader will say, okay, turn to page 50. What are you going to do? There's a second problem. Novels, short stories, whatever, tend to be in one language. When you open up a Jewish prayer book, or maybe even other religions, right? I would think a Catholic prayer book, you're going to see multiple languages. You're going to see Hebrew. You're going to see English. You're going to see what's called transliteration. Transliteration is, I'm going to take the Hebrew sound letters and put them into English letters. So for somebody who can't read Hebrew in its language, can still follow along the Hebrew chanting through the transliteration. You also might see some commentary, and it kind of might be spread throughout the page. Well, that's a problem. So my focus was, how do we resolve those problems to make this usable? Because if we could resolve those problems, right, a person could take the device to the synagogue. It works not only with plugging in, but it works on batteries as well. So you could literally take it and have everything you need, assuming we could resolve the issues. So I spent some time in working on the coding about how to resolve these issues, and I did so. So how do we do it? Remember, the text page is not going to be the same as a Braille page, is it? But the leaders or anybody that's going to do a reading, you know, even if it's out of a novel or whatever, they're going to refer to the written page, not the refreshable Braille page. So here's what I did. There's in the refreshable Braille device, they have what's called a find function. What is that? You hit the F. It's a 6-key, just like a, why am I missing the name? I just lost me. What's the way you normally type with Braille? What's the name of the machine?
A Braille machine?
Yeah.
A Braille writer?
Braille writer, right? And it typically has, right, 6 things. You can,
in so a
you
cell. Type, that's right, a Braille cell.
Right, the Braille cell, but there was a company that looks like a typewriter, right?
Perkins.
Right, the Perkins. So I learned also a little bit on the Perkins, right? It has 6 keys, so you can do the 6 dots of the Braille cell. So what do you do? Well, what happens if I put a tag at the beginning of a written segment? So what do I mean by that? So let's look at the 5 books of Moses. If we look at, I'm going to go to chapter 3, page 25. So if I put C0325, C tells me it's the chapter. The first 2 digits tells me it's the chapter number. And the last 2 numbers, the 25, tells me it's the page number, or the line number, the verse number. So it doesn't matter where it is in the Braille book or in the Braille file. If I type find C0325, boom. In a matter of a split second, I'm at chapter 3, verse 25. So I can go from one place to any other place in the book just by through the find function. Then what I did is I says, okay, using that same methodology, we're going to divide up. Instead of having it all over the page, I'm going to sequence it down the page for our Braille people, for our blind people, always the same. What I mean by that is, the first segment of any page is always going to be the Hebrew. And I got to do another little explanation, because you can get Hebrew without vowels or Hebrew with vowels. That's another long discussion I don't have time for. Then we will have transliteration. Then we're going to have English. So on page 3, chapter 3, verse 25, if I want to go to the Hebrew directly, I could go to H0325. It'll take me directly to the Hebrew. Or I could go to C0325 and just line down to the Hebrew. Same thing for if I wanted to go to just the English. E0325. If I hit that with the find function, I go right to the English of chapter 3, verse 25. Or I could go to the C0325 and just line down till I get to the E. In between each segment, I have a empty line and a set of dots, just a set of dashes, a line break, so that you know that you're at the end of the segment. So in this case, let's say I'm a Christian person and I just wanted to read the English of the 5 books of Moses. You can still use these files, because you could just go to the C and then drop down line by line till you get to the E, or just go to the E of any chapter that you want. Now, take some time, because again, I had to deconstruct, right, every single page of the 5 books of Moses and reorganize it into these segments, put it into its various line segments, and then put it into Braille. Now, ultimately, what I used is the BRF format. Again, why? Because that's not telling me a language. That's just telling me dots. Now, it doesn't care whether it's Hebrew or English, it's just reading dots. So it reads dots throughout. You know it's Hebrew because the segment starts with H. or English, even if it's transliteration, for T or E. So in this way, I could put the entire book, all five books, into this file. The entire file can go into your device. You could take the device and follow along a reading either at the church, at the synagogue, or any place else for that matter that you want. I then turned around and did this for prayer books. So I did it for the Reform prayer book, Jewish and Hebrew, and the Reconstructionist prayer book. Again, I had a different segment there as well, because you might find a lot of commentary on the in the prayer book as well. And so I have a commentary section. Now, my approach to doing all this work, and it takes a lot of time and effort and some money, I have a nonprofit corporation that I run this stuff through. I get and apply and receive grants to do the work, so that once the work is done, all these items are offered to the people for free. So anybody that wants any of these works can get them. You get them from me for free. You get the device from the government for free. That's a pretty good deal. So what have I got to date? To date, I have put into Refreshable Braille the five books of Moses. Again, each verse is Hebrew without vowels, Hebrew with vowels, transliteration in English. I think I'd like to do one more other small comment, because I do other things to help along as best I can for people, because my focus was on use at the synagogue while other people were reading the text so they can follow along. So I said, well, how do you follow along as quickly as possible? If you ever got a chance to observe or experience an actual Torah scroll, it does not use, there is no capitals in Hebrew, and they don't in the Torah scroll use grammar. Again, there's lots of reasons that I don't have time to get in for that now. And when I did the five books in Refreshable Braille, I used the same technique, even on the English. Why? Well, again, think about all the grammar. If you have a period, that's an extra cell. You have a capital, it's an extra cell. A comma, it's an extra cell. So by removing all those extra cells, you can read the text so much faster. Takes a little getting used to, because, you know, most people that do read Braille, you know, focus a little bit on the grammar. But it actually, when you get used to it, it really makes it kind of neat, kind of cool. It lets you go so much faster, because it's that much less you have to digest as your fingers move along the page. All right, what else do I have in Refreshable Braille? I put together what's called a Jewish history timeline. That's from the Jewish, I lose it. They're an online company. I got permission. I go from roughly 3800 BCE to 1949. I do use grammar there. Again, that's free. I created a book called Modern Midrashim. A midrash is a Jewish fable. I created 54 short stories. It's based on the weekly Torah portion. I did use grammar for that, but you can get it in either grade 1 or grade 2. And this does use grammar, but again, it's free. Again, the Mishkan Tefillah prayer book is free for Shabbat. The Mishkan HaNefesh, I did the High Holy Day prayer books, which we just finished up this last week for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur in Refreshable Braille. Kol HaNishama, which is the Reconstructionist prayer book. But I need to talk about one other item that I needed to broach, because as I was talking to people around the country, again, remember I said most of these people never joined synagogues. They didn't feel a part of it. So did they know Hebrew Braille? No, they never bothered. When I went to go learn Hebrew Braille some 8 years ago, there was a problem. There's nobody that taught it. In the entire country, there was not one institution that taught Hebrew Braille at that point in time. I was able to find a number of books that I was able to bring in and get through it and eventually learn. So I decided, well, if people are going to use this stuff, at least from a Jewish standpoint, they're going to have to learn Hebrew Braille. So I actually created a course that teaches Hebrew Braille. It uses hardbound texts. It uses uncontracted English Braille to teach the Hebrew Braille. I also send a set of accompanied graphic textbooks so a person that's local with you can follow along and they don't need to know Braille or Hebrew and can explain what's on the page. Or again, if you run into a real problem, they're always welcome to give me a call. I offer this course for free. We already talked a little bit about the Torah scrolls. I can expand on that if you want. But again, all this stuff is available. I do want to make a little editorial comment. I think it's necessary. One of the things that I have found in my 8 years involved in these issues is so often blind and visually impaired people wait for others to kind of step up and do the work or offer stuff. It's always been my focus and direction that you need to solve your own problems as best you can. You need to put forth your own time and effort to doing anything you want to do. You know, I've heard many times, well, I have some older people, they're too old to learn Hebrew Braille or English Braille. It's not the case, folks. Anyone can learn it. It's not something that's going to be done in a week. You know, think back to when you learned, if you ever did learn English, right? Regular English, right? Did you do it in a week? No, it took a year. It took longer. You have to keep working at it. And so certainly my focus is I'm going to create whatever works I can to allow the blind and visually impaired to be absolutely fully participatory in the community. I think these books that I've created can be used not only by the Jewish community, but the Christian community. I'm in the process of putting the rest of the canon into refreshable Braille. There's a number of books I already have done. The Book of Jonah is an example. Book of Judges of Joshua is done. I'm in process of doing Psalms. So all those other books are available and will be available for free. And can be used again also not only by Jewish people, but by Christian people. But my focus is if it's something you really want to do, let's find a way to do it. Don't wait for some sighted person to say, oh, I'm going to take care of you. Jump in and say, let's go. Let's do it. We know it's going to take time. It's going to take effort. There's no question about it. This is not an easy stuff to do or to overturn, but you can. There's no reason not to. So I'm hoping that the people will take advantage of what I have to offer. Even the Torah scrolls can be borrowed for free, although I do ask you to pick up transportation for that. The other stuff, you don't even need transportation because, right, if it's a flash drive, I can either mail it to you or even email it to you. So that's where I'm at. I think refreshable Braille is something you really need to look at a lot more closely because it's so portable, right? One of my big issues when I first started to learn is I brought in all these books. My library was getting overrun with these huge volumes and I really wasn't using them all that much because of the bulk. Well, you could put an entire library into your top drawer if you wanted to refreshable Braille wise.
And so nowadays,
yeah.
What is the most common piece of technology used to read refreshable Braille? What would you suggest that we use for the most
part? Well, again, the federal government offers, it depends on your state. There's two flavors that it uses, two manufacturers. Depending on the state you're in, they'll send you one or the other. And since it's for free, that's the way I would go for anybody. That's a great way to start.
I see. I'm going to give Peter a chance to react to some of this before we invite our listening audience to participate with us. Peter, did you have anything to say in response before we pursue the listener portion of our show?
Hold on for a second. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay. Nothing for me. Thank you for that explanation.
All right. So without further ado, let me welcome our participants. To come in, you're listening to In Perspective, and our guest is Rabbi Lenny Sarko. Cindy, do we have any hands raised at this time?
Yes, we do.
Okay, all right.
Len, go ahead. Hi, Rabbi Lindy. You know, he has a fan club, and those of us on Jewish Hour really appreciate him giving us his wisdom and everything like that. And he's explained a lot about the Sefer Torah, the Braille scroll that he put together, and he showed it at one of the ACB conferences a few years ago. And we really appreciate him, and I'm so glad that you had him back, and I put it on the Jewish Hour, so hopefully people will listen either now or when it's on the podcast. So I really appreciate you, Lenny, Rabbi Lenny, and you know that. So
thank you.
keep on keeping on.
Thank you. Thank you for your comments there.
Am I allowed to give my email or website?
Yes, you can.
Okay.
Yes. Go ahead.
All right, so if anybody wants any of these, again, they're free. You can either email me. My email address is rabbi, R-A-B-B-I, at Rabbi Sarko, R-A-B-B-I, S as in Sam, A-R-K-O, .org. You can also get all this information at the website devarim.org, D-E-V as in Victor, A-R-I-M.org.
Devarim.
Yes.
.org. Okay, well, thank you for that. There might be some people out there interested in getting some of this material that you're talking about. Cindy, do we have anyone else on the agenda?
No, we do not.
Well, I shut everybody up.
Let us know when that changes, Cindy.
I will.
Rabbi, I want to turn a corner if you don't mind.
Sure.
Because a lot's happened over the past couple of weeks. You know, it's been the high holidays of the Jewish year, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur. And of course, we have a peace agreement in the Middle East. And I wonder whatever thoughts you have about any of those topics. And you might also want to sort of give us who are Jewish sort of, sort of what those holidays mean in the Jewish year.
Okay. Not a problem. I'm just going to make a real quick comment on the peace agreement. Unfortunately, I'm a little skeptical. I'll believe it when it happens.
Yeah.
So guardedly optimistic, but we've been down this road before, so we'll just let that sit the way it is. So let's talk about the Jewish High Holy Days. It begins with something called Slichot, but really Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah means Rosh's head, Hashanah, the year. It's the Jewish New Year. Now, why is the Jewish New Year in October or September? Isn't it December 31st? Well, it really goes back to, again, if you look at the Bible, the celebration of Rosh Hashanah begins directly after the Jewish people are freed from Egypt as part of the Exodus, right? So it's the belief in Judaism that if you're a slave, you really can't practice Judaism. So there was no function for the holiday before that. Again, how do Jews celebrate Rosh Hashanah? Well, how do secular people celebrate December 31st? What do?
Many of us go to sleep as quickly as possible.
Okay.
Some people go out and party.
Party. Right? Fireworks.
Some watch the ball from Times Square.
Right. All that kind of stuff. In Judaism, what we do is we go to the synagogue. And the object is to come together as a community. And what we are really trying to do is take a few days, or actually across the 10, which includes Yom Kippur, and think about our actions from the previous year, both good and bad. With the idea of saying, okay, based on this retrospective, what do I want to do the coming year? How do I want to act? What do I want to accomplish? What do I want to do? How can I be a better person? That is what is done on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. That's its function. Again, it's interesting. Why come together? One of the things that I always find interesting, and again, this is not any kind of slur against anybody. It's just an observation. Right? We're not talking about right or wrong. We're talking about perspective. When I pick up a Christian prayer book, a lot of eyes in the prayer books. Again, if you go to church, what's your purpose? What's the purpose of going to church? Who's Christian here that wants to answer that?
Well, we pray a lot in church. That I know.
Well, but who do you pray to?
We pray to God. We pray to Jesus.
Okay. So from a Jewish perspective, we see that as a focus of people individually trying to make a connection between themselves and God, which is great. Okay. But that's not a Jewish point of view. In Judaism, we don't use I. We use plurals. We, us. We don't pray to God. We pray with God. There's a difference there, folks. Think about it. Best example I can give you, we do a prayer for bread, yes? In Hebrew, Baruch Atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam HaMotzi Lecha Min Haaretz. Why are we doing this prayer? Well, that's kind of an interesting subject to think about. What's the function of the bread? Why eat bread? Why eat food? Oh, this isn't that tough, guys.
Well, we eat it based on, well, one of the things is the Last Supper. So we base a lot of our behavior in church on.
Well, I'm talking about breakfast, lunch, or dinner.
We eat it because
to fulfill ourselves.
Well, we keep hunger at bay, as it were,
yeah,
right?
Okay. Food is there for sustenance, yes?
Yeah, sustenance.
Sustenance. That's what it's there for. Do you need to make a prayer for the food to give you sustenance?
I don't think so.
No, absolutely not. So what is its function? In Judaism, its function is a pause. Why pause before I eat the bread to say a prayer? Well, let's think about this bread for a second. Remember I said we pray with God, not to God. Who provides the original wheat seed?
God, theoretically. God. Right?
Okay, who plants it?
Ah.
Who plants it?
The farmer.
Farmer, we do.
Yeah.
Who provides the sun and the rain to help it grow?
God does.
God.
Okay. Who tills it and harvests it and mills it and bakes it into the bread?
The farmer.
Okay. So that last piece of bread that we have, first of all, is a great example of what we call Brit Covenant, a partnership between us and God. And what we do with the prayer is we're pausing just for a second or two to think about all these people that helped make this wonderful piece of bread. We're taking the idea of just gaining sustenance, an animalistic act, and we're doing what's called aliyah, raising it to a new level, something more. Whether you want to call it holy or whatever, it doesn't matter. You're giving it a little thought to say, isn't it so nice of all these people and God being involved in providing this wonderful piece of bread for me? That's what that prayer is for. So. Again, we do prayers, the same thing when we look at Yom Kippur, which happens 10 days after Rosh Hashanah. Yom Kippur means Day of Atonement. It's the only major fast day in Judaism. Why fast? Again, it's maybe not what you think. First of all, there's something in the Jewish religion that takes precedence over everything. I mean everything. And that is? Life.
Ah.
Life takes precedence. So you're supposed to eat kosher food. If you're stuck on a desert island all alone and the only thing running around is pigs, guess what? Ham is on the menu, even if you're Jewish. During Yom Kippur, Day of Atonement, fast day. If you're a lady and you're pregnant, do you fast that day?
No.
No. That would actually be considered a sin. If you're diabetic and you have to take pills with food, do you fast on Yom Kippur?
Nope.
No. If there's any question, any issue at all, life takes precedence, you don't fast. But we also have to ask the question, why do we fast to begin with? So again, let me ask a kind of an interesting question. I don't know about you, but if it's during the week, Tuesday or Wednesday, yes, and I get up and I have breakfast, I finish breakfast, what am I thinking about?
Well, if you're like me, it's what's for lunch?
You got it. I finished lunch. What am I thinking about?
That's if you think about food at that particular time.
Well,
after you finish a meal.
Yeah, most people do.
Yeah.
You finish lunch, what do you think about?
Dinner or a snack or
right. Something. So we fast to say, okay, look it. I'm going to set aside food for the day because my entire focus – is going to be on this retrospective to think about what's going to be done before and what I want to do after. That's the reason for the fast. All right, so we finish Yom Kippur. And again, this is, again, I want you to think about it a little bit. This isn't just individual, it's communal. So it's kind of an interesting question. Is there such a thing as a communal sin? Making people think way too much today, I can see.
Communal that. Sin, would that be like a group sin?
Yeah. What's a group sin?
Well, if we're all doing the same thing that's wrong, I'm assuming that that would be a communal sin.
Well, let's give some examples.
Well, we as a group not loving our enemies, to put it in Christian perspective.
Okay, you got it. There's not that's a good group sin. Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Right? Racism is a group sin, is it not?
Yeah.
And we could go on and on.
It's also an individual sin, perhaps, but it's...
Yeah, it can be. It absolutely can be.
Yeah.
But there are things we could do as a group. What happens if you're in a church and the rabbi starts to walk into the church and you say, you can't come in here? Because you're Jewish. Is that hospitality?
No.
Far from it.
Well, isn't that a group sin?
It could be.
Especially if you're speaking on behalf of a group.
Yeah.
When you say that.
The group is stopping you from coming in.
Yeah.
So we come together again, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, and we're thinking not about our individual actions, but our communal actions, yes? Community. I can feed a poor person, but maybe together as a community, we can feed a whole bunch of people, can't we?
Yep.
That would be the opposite. That would be a mitzvah, a good thing. And so we should be thinking about that as well. How can we help the group? How can we band together our energies to do even a greater good?
This you have a hand up, guys.
Okay.
All right, Cindy, who is it?
Okay, Joni, go ahead. Smith 623.
Hello?
And you are
Cindy,
still here.
You remembered me.
Yes.
Hey, Joe. How are you?
Hi, Bob. Hi, Rabbi Lenny.
Hi.
And everybody that's here. I am Jewish and very proud of it. And Lynn, who is here now as the group, the Jewish Hour, every Monday. And Rabbi Lenny comes in and speaks to us, and I have learned more about my religion since I've heard Rabbi Lenny speak. Rabbi Lenny, and I know Peter is here, and he is wonderful. We have wonderful people that come into our group and teach us so, so much. And I just love Rabbi Lenny, and I love Peter too. And I have learned so, so much. I just wish that there could be a clone of Rabbi Lenny and I could take him to places and let my Christian friends ask him questions, and he would always be there to answer them for me. But that can't be done. But anyway, I just found a few minutes ago, found that you were going to be here today, Rabbi Lenny. And thank you so much. And thank you, Bob. And I'm so glad that you had this today.
Let's learn about rabbi. What's a rabbi?
A rabbi is a teacher.
Right. It's considered a religious teacher. Actually, the I at the end of a Hebrew word means mine or my. So actually the actual Hebrew term is Rav. So here of Rav Cook, Rav Soloveitchik, Jacob, if you have a religious teacher that's not, that you don't have a personal connection to, you say the term Rav. If you say rabbi, although in today's world it's become a lot more genericized, it really means my Rav, my religious teacher. It's kind of a term of endearment, of respect. It's quite nice.
Thank you.
Thank you, Joni.
Bob, you have 9 minutes.
Thank you, Cindy. Any other hands at this time?
No, I was all excited when I saw Joni here.
Oh, okay.
Well, thanks for interrupting us. That's an important part of what you do. So thank you for doing that to let us know when there are hands out there.
Why don't you go ahead and let me finish the holidays then, since there's no
Israelis
hands. So after Yom Kippur, we have Sukkot. That's what we're involved with this week. It's a week-long holiday. It is a biblical holiday. It's found in the five books of Moses. We set up these Sukkot. Sukkah is a kind of a mobile living quarter, living hut. It's supposed to represent the huts that the Israelites used as they were passing, traveling around the Bamidbar, the wilderness, after the Exodus, before they went into Israel. It's also an agricultural holiday. If you go to Israel, they'll build these sukkahs in the middle of the streets, on balconies, every place else. Again, you're supposed to eat meals there. Some people will actually sleep in them. Again, it's a time of great celebration and having meals together and communities getting together and having a wonderful time moving forward. The end of next week, middle of next week, and then we actually do ours a week from Friday, but I think it's a week from Wednesday. It's called Simchat Torah, Happiness of the Torah. Again, it's kind of interesting. Remember I said that we read the five books of Moses week to week, and we divide it into 54 segments, and each segment is given a week. Well, what happens when you get to the end of the fifth book of the five books of Moses? You would think normally you would finish it and then come back the next week and start over. Not in Judaism. In Judaism, we never want to stop learning. So the tradition is next week we will do the last few verses, last paragraphs, whatever, of the fifth book of the five books of Moses. And we will immediately start at the same time for the first few in Genesis. So it acts as a continuum. It's also a holiday that you'll see people dancing with Torah scrolls. You go to New York City, they'll dance with them in the streets. It's one of the holidays that anyone, non-Jewish or a child, can also have the opportunity to dance with the Torah scroll. So that's Simchat Torah, and that really kind of finally puts an end to basically a month long of holidays.
And I didn't ask you about this, but there is, of course, Passover, which is usually in the spring. And my understanding of that is I got a text at the wrong moment. That's also to celebrate the Israelites escaping Egypt and slavery and all that involves.
Yeah. Here's an interesting perspective for you.
Yep.
Christian holidays. What are they about? What's the focus?
Christ, Jesus.
Jesus.
Right, you got it. Jewish holidays. They're not about, again, this connection between us and God. They're actually, the ones in the Torah are actually all about different types of freedom for the Jewish people. So let's talk about that. Passover, you just mentioned. Physical freedom.
Yep.
From Egypt. I think it's what, around 45 days later, give or take, Shavuot. We receive the Torah on Mount Sinai. Mental freedom. We celebrate what? Purim. Yes? Story of Esther. What's that about? Freedom from genocide. Right? Haman was going to kill all the Jews.
Yeah.
Hanukkah. Religious freedom. Right? Antiochus and why does the name escape me? His group outlawed Judaism.
Maccabees?
Well, the Maccabees fought them. Antiochus was the king of people that lived in Iran, Iraq. Why am I, the name is escaping me for right now.
Whatever. Yeah.
At any rate, he outlawed Judaism. Religious freedom. All the holidays are about different types of freedom.
And so when you get to what we were just talking about, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur. What freedoms are we talking about there?
Well, freedom of thought, freedom of action, right? Freedom of control of your acts and what you do.
And how does thinking about what you're saying, and as we all said, Christians tend to focus on Jesus, you know, and God. And obviously you folks believe in God, Jews believe in God too, right?
Yes.
How does God play into that? God created the heavens and the earth. How does, when you're talking about these freedoms, how does God tie into all that?
Okay, so let's look at that the best way I know how. So, right, the first of all, in the five books of Moses, we have 613 mitzvot. You call them commandments. It's a core term. I don't have time for that now to explain it. But all those commandments are not focusing on the relationship between me and God, but me and you. Yes? Do yep. not kill. Is that me and God or me and you? Me and you.
Us.
Do unto others. Me and you. Honor your mother and father. Me and you. All 613. Me and you.
But there are some that says thou shalt not create.
Let me get to it. I'll get to
okay,
it.
Okay, that's fair.
So again, in Christianity, the connection between you and God defines your connection between you and people. In Judaism, the connection between people define your connection to God. Now, how do you explain that first commandment? There's only one God. Okay, well, think of two fists. In one fist, you have God, and in other fist, you got everything else. Where am I? Which fist?
I'm sorry, the second fist was what?
Everything else.
So which fist is what? I'm sorry, what was your question?
Left fist is God, right fist is everything else. Where am I?
Yeah.
Where am I?
Yeah. Oh.
I'm in the right fist.
You're in the right fist. Yeah.
Where's Peter?
In the right fist, I would have said.
The right fist. How does that define my relationship to Peter?
We're
equal.
We're equal. Yeah.
Again, why can anyone lead a Jewish service? Because we're all equal. Why can anyone read from the Torah? We're all equal.
Rob, you have 1 minute.
Yeah. We're going to have to be wrapping up, Rabbi.
I'm sorry. That defines that relationship.
No, that's terrific. Thank you.
Great points. And we want to thank you very much for being with us again. We'd like to have you back again sometime in the future. And keep up the good work. You've taught us a lot today, and we appreciate all that you've taught us. We appreciate your wisdom as well. So, shalom, Rabbi. And
shalom.
We will definitely have you back again. If, you know, just we can make that arrangement at any time.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Peter. I want to say hi to Rodney Neely, by the way. He's a listener to Introspective. Thank you very much. And I want to thank everybody for today's program. Go safe with God's abundant blessings, and see you next week.